What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with another pod. What's going on in pop culture right now? Gonna be a light one this week. Last week was quite long, so evening it out over these past 2 weeks. Whatever, you get it. Slower week. But still three things happy to get into. Anatomy of a Fall, Justin Triet's Palme d'Or winning courtroom drama thriller film that premiered back at Cannes earlier this year. Very excited to talk about that. It's great. And then two music drops, both surprises. Number one, Brent Faiyaz's new surprise album, Larger Than Life, his third album. This guy's running R&B right now. You got to get on board. And then probably even more surprising than Brent dropping an album a year and change after he dropped his last one is Amir Van and Merlin Wood, both formerly of Brockhampton, releasing a collab tape, 25-minute, 30-minute tape out of nowhere a week before Kevin Abstract's album. A lot to get into with that. So make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod, get the pod any way you can. Just make sure you get it. See the links below for the best of 2023 Spotify playlist for my favorite songs of the year updated weekly. And let's get into it. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of Amir Van and Merlin Wood's collab mixtape / album, Slime in the Ice Machine. This one definitely came out of nowhere for me. Of course, Amir and Merlin, both former Brockhampton members. Merlin no longer in Brockhampton because Brockhampton has broken up as a group. We covered the last two Brockhampton albums, TM and The Family, when they came out at the end of last year. Make sure you check that out. Been a big fan of Brockhampton for a long time. Been covering that rise. Did our Brockhampton album rankings. See the link below for that. Been talking about Brockhampton for years at this point. Amir left Brockhampton in 2018, as everybody knows, due to various abuse allegations. And Amir's made a comeback since then with his Emmanuel EP. In the announcement of this new record, he said that he's no longer on RCA Records. So now it comes a little clear in hindsight that he was still kind of on that Brockhampton umbrella RCA deal until now. So this is a brand new release. And I've got to say, I'm surprised to see someone else from Brockhampton making a record with him. Even all the stories and the bad blood we had heard, especially from the Dom side of things with Brockhampton, just wasn't sure if we were ever going to see something like this. But it's probably more than anything, more further evidence that Brockhampton is truly split up. Of course, Kevin Abstract's third solo album is coming out a week from today. So the timing is pretty obvious. I think they're almost kind of capitalizing on Kevin's more genuine official marketing that he's doing on his effort, interestingly enough. But I gotta say, you know, 10 songs, 24 minutes, Amir and Merlin, it's pretty good, honestly. I like this more than Amir's Emmanuel EP. I like this more than any of the handful of Merlin solo songs he's put out over the years. It's not bad. You know, I think, you think about these artists, right? Amir, especially during his time in Brockhampton, where he was literally the face of Brockhampton, literally on all the album covers, was him. Amir was the best rapper in the group. And he has a darkness to his voice, the way he raps, but just a really good technical ability. Sounds good on the mic. And some of the best Brockhampton songs feature big Amir Van verses. Merlin, I wouldn't put on that level for sure. But his, I think, kind of unique or recognizable energy has always stood out as part of Brockhampton. I think of my favorite Brockhampton song off Saturation 2, Sweet, features one of my favorite Merlin performances ever. You know, famously, this is Merlin Wood, man. Everywhere I go is the woodlands. Love that shit. You know, Merlin not afraid to blow his top off on the mic. He's been fun with that energy. So putting him with Amir, I was curious if Merlin could keep up with Amir Van. Straight up, just because, again, Amir's pretty good on the mic. Like, can you hang? And it definitely comes across as an Amir project first. Like, Merlin's kind of in support of Amir. But I gotta say, Merlin hangs around. Pretty impressed. You know, if you just think, go through the track list here, the first song, Swisher, I think that one stands out just because Amir's rapping at slightly a higher pitch than his normal, like, deep register that you think of. Just kind of a quick two-verse song, one from each of them, over in 2 minutes. Smog Check, really like the Amir verse on this one. Merlin kind of starting out slightly melodic, again, doing something a little different than what he usually did. On the production side, I think the keys are really nice, kind of just a simple drum loop. Almost here feels like you hear vinyl scratching a little bit in the background too. Interesting beat. On Everything, I thought was kind of forgettable. And then track four, Okay. This one's really hard. Again, kind of a simple looping beat, but Amir's really bringing it on this one. Hit. I like this one quite a bit. Violin, very noticeable on the beat here. And the autotune from both Amir and Merlin. Wasn't necessarily expecting to hear that, given how the album had been going to this point, but they both sound really good and still really hard despite using autotune, really going bar for bar with each other. Again, Merlin really hanging with Amir. Rap-wise, I was quite impressed with this one. My only negative with it, with Hit, is the repetitive Hit chorus is definitely a weak, underwritten moment. Freaks is pretty good, but another weak, repetitive chorus, and the song's really short, only 67 seconds. Bling Bling, probably my favorite song. You know, the beat's kind of boom-bappy, honestly. Give you almost like a horrorcore vibe, too. Definitely sounds a bit haunting. This one's really hard. I love Amir on the hook. Love the drums. I think they both just kind of float on this song. This one's really great. Love is a Scandal. I like how understated and high register Amir is again on this one. Just a bit different than what he used to do, kind of showing a different side of him. And the hook on that one, I think, is pretty fun. Merlin, probably his most lyrical. You know, he's getting quite personal, talking about his past on this one. Sounds pretty cool. Then kind of out of nowhere, there's a horn outro. Didn't really hear any horns anywhere else on the album. Song 2, Merlin again, kind of getting in the storytelling bag here. And then Ride, kind of interesting because it's like lo-fi, almost distorted with the vocals. The mixing is interesting, you know, because the guys kind of sound quiet on that one. So, yeah, it's a brief listen for sure, but, I mean, it definitely brought me back to how Amir used to sound on, you know, the Saturation Trilogy, for example. I was pretty impressed with it. Obviously, Amir, complicated figure. A lot of people don't want to listen to him, which is, again, totally fine, totally right, you know. I mean, at this point, it's been 5 years since he left Brockhampton. Haven't really heard anything about those allegations since then. There's been denials. There's been updates to the stories. Either way, complicated figure. But again, I'm pretty shocked, honestly, that someone still in the Brockhampton orbit as recently as last year, Merlin, you know, one of the members, the fact that he made a project with Amir is quite interesting. So I'll be curious how the Kevin album sounds. It's supposed to be going into a Barack direction, if the singles are any indication. We'll see. But yeah, let me know. How'd you feel about Amir and Merlin's random surprise album, Slime the Ice Machine? Leave a comment, let me know. See the link below for the Brockhampton album rankings that we did. And let me know what you're thinking. And for more rap reviews, more music reviews, subscribe. And I'll see you next time. What's up, Wildlife Nostalgia? Dave here with a review of Brent Faiyaz's third album, Larger Than Life. Yes, Brent is back. Surprise album. No Notice. Only a year and change since his last album, Wasteland, came out. Summer 2022. And Brent is back because why would he leave? This guy is running R&B. He is, without a doubt, the most interesting, most successful, most consistent figure in male R&B, for sure. Been a big Brent fan. His album, Wasteland, was on my top 10 albums of 2022. The earliest single from that album, Gravity, was on my best songs of 2021, very high up there. Been a Brent guy for some time now. And Larger Than Life, you know, it's short. 14 songs, 36 minutes, a lot of shorter tracks on this, but still feels like a full body of work, and Brent is still giving you what he does best, which is, I think, just really confident R&B music with impressive production choices, and really gives you, I think, a really strong feeling. But even him, you know, Brent, not the strongest singer in the R&B space. There are better voices out there, but Brent, he really knows how to match beats to his vocal strengths and can really give you a feeling. In this case, Timbaland, Pharrell, Neptunes vibes for sure. I mean, the first track, Tim's intro, literally has Timbaland vocals, like he's making it obvious for you too. But that those 2000s of R&B vibes, bringing those back, you know, the heyday, it's pretty cool. And, you know, shout out Brent because obviously he's got so successful as while being an independent artist. I think people know this at this point. He's done amazing for himself. This year, 2023, he signed a $50 million distribution deal with United Masters. So he's still maintaining his independence, but now has actual some like legit industry support behind him. And on top of that, he's founded his own label and creative company, ISO Supremacy. starting to sign artists and kind of make his own, you know, universe. It's pretty cool. So shout out Brent once again. But yeah, just kind of getting into the music here. I mentioned Tim's intro, which really gives you the 2000s R&B vibes with Timbaland vocals to top it all off. Literally living larger than life, as he tells us. And then kind of jumping right into it, you know, the first full song, Last One Left. I love when Brent Faiyaz decides to double his vocals, almost kind of like echoing himself. I think it really elevates his singing. It sounds really cool. It's very catchy all the time. The When They Speak About It part, so good. You know, beat-wise, it's really just kind of a simple drum line. But, you know, again, those mixing choices with his vocals, I think, go such a long way. You know, and Missy kind of in the background on it, but Little Gray, I think, kind of jumps in on the feature and getting right into the more toxic Brent subject matter that we've come to know as well. Forever Yours, only 90 seconds long, but still like a pretty nice, like quick drum tempo, fun to listen to. Best Time, this one's really strong. I love the snares on this. You know, the sentiment though, 82 second song, it still leaves you with, I think, classic Brentism. All the pretty girls want to be gay. Shades, not even shades, literally what we expect from 2010's The Weeknd, you know. Challenging thing to say there, but he's committed to it as he is. You have the skit, where Brent actually kind of croons at the end of, for sure. Then you have the lead single, Moment of Your Life. At the time, it was just a loose single. You know, we didn't know it was going to be on this album, Moment of Your Life, featuring Coco Jones. Great song. Already on my best of 2023 Spotify playlist, he'd link below for that. Love the doubling vocals from Brent on this. Once again, he sounds so good. Outside All Night, I love the keys on this. Really sounds like a movie soundtrack, like an old-timey vibe. With the drums kick in once Brent's vocals begin as well, sounds great. I got ASAP Rocky on the feature. Whenever I hear ASAP Rocky, I'm always asking Rocky, please drop the new album. It's been so long. But Rocky sounds pretty good on it. Yeah, going further through it, I was even more shocked to get on this side because you have a feature from ASAP Ant, YG Addy himself. Was not expecting that, but pretty cool song still. I think my favorite song on the record, though, would be Upset, featuring Tommy Reichman and Felix. Man, this shit's hella catchy, man. I think this goes so hard. This is, to me, this is like platonic ideal Brent, like Brent vocal performance. This is what I want from him. I think that one's great. And towards the end, you get Belong to You with Babyface Ray on the feature. Shout out Detroit. Where You At was one of the lead the second single. And yeah, I mean, I think that this is just another great Brent record, you know, because Brent, at this point, I think he's really committed and confident in what his sound is, what the musical choices he likes to make. So, like, this is very rewarding, seamless, cohesive production. And Brent is so in his bag at this point at knowing what to do with his vocals, knowing how to mix them, knowing how to ride on these beats. And this is a guy who he just kind of floats at this point. Like, it sounds so good. And again, like, I don't even know who to compare him to male R&B at this point, because I think he is by far and away the most compelling figure. And the fact that he's also an independent artist who's kind of built all this up on his own, that just makes it even more cool and more exciting and more fun to root for the guy. So yeah, shout out Brent. I'm going to be revisiting this one a lot. And yeah, but let me know, how did you feel about Brent's new album, Larger Than Life? How would you compare it to Wasteland from last year? And for more music reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. What's up? Well, Matt Nostalgia, Dave here with a review of Anatomy of a Fall, the courtroom drama thriller film from French director Justine Triet. Anatomy of a Fall won the Palme d'Or at Cannes earlier this year and is now slowly expanding in release in the U.S. after being a very big hit in France, where it sold over a million tickets and had the biggest opening for a Palme d'Or winner in France since 2008, currently at a $10.2 million gross on only a 6.2 million euro budget. So becoming a bit of a hit for an adult film, which we'd love to see. But yeah, I'll be curious to see how this movie performs in the United States as a French film, of course, although there is plenty of English dialogue in this movie. And yeah, I think Anatomy of a Fall is tremendous. This is a fantastic film. Honestly, love the movie. And, you know, I'd be very curious how this does in the Oscar race, because this is, you know, a French film that won the Palme d'Or, but yet was not selected for the French submission for Best International Feature at the Oscars. They picked a different movie. They've done this in the past. They did this recently with Titan. Of course, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, famously this happened too. We'll see what happens there. But Neon, you know, expanding the film right now, definitely check it out. And yeah, I think what's so cool about this movie is that it's a courtroom drama, but it's not concerned with the whodunit of the mystery. And it's really, I think, more about the emotions and dynamics of the relationship that's being put on trial in this. So I'm going to spoil the movie to come, but I got to say, Anatomy of Fall, check it out. It's great. So yeah, I think what's so cool about Anatomy of Fall, which again starts off quite briskly getting you into the death in question, where Sandra, this German writer, her husband falls from the balcony of their French mountain chalet and of course dies, and Sandra unsurprisingly becomes the prime suspect and has to defend her innocence. And Sandra Hüller, who plays Sandra, she does a great job of portraying an enigmatic character who's both kind of inviting the audience sympathy but still presenting plenty of doubt as a character in terms of what is the truth. And to have like the courtroom drama, which in and of itself is always fun, even if it's more conventional, have the courtroom drama stuff be where we experience most of the key character work is really impressive to me. I think the script is really special. And probably like the one like big standout scene, it's a long scene, is when we're in the courtroom and a recording that Sandra's husband Sam had saved of a fight they had a day before he died. He fell and died. That recording is played for the court, and we see via flashback that recording, like, you know, in picture, in scene. And it is a really impressive scene from both performers. You have Sam Tice playing Samuel, and with Sandra Hüller and Sam Tice, they place such a rich and fully realized portrayal of a relationship breaking down, and, you know, thoughts of blame and culpability and responsibility, infidelity. Like, they cover, I think, so much ground, but nothing ever gets hokey or preachy at all. Like, and this movie, Anatomy of Fall, does such a good job of maintaining tension to the viewer, and you're just incredibly invested in what's going on. I think, again, it speaks to the strength of that script. And watching the specter of doubt and how we explain things that we can't explain with objective facts, with emotion and suspicion, having that kind of be what we're thinking about throughout the mechanics of the courtroom stuff, again, I think is really impressive. Key aspect, of course, to the story is that Samuel and Sandra have a son, Daniel, played by Milo Machado-Graner, and Daniel went blind at age 4 in accident, and that's a key aspect of this relationship and how both characters handled that incident, that accident, is different. And Daniel, that's pretty good child performance, even though he's a bit understated of understanding, you know, given that he's a blind character. But Daniel, I think, plays a really key role in the story, you know, his relationship with his mother, Sandra, after the trial's beginning. And, you know, you think about the kid and having the kid be present in the court the whole time as revelations about his parents are revealed to him. You know, he's only 11 years old. He's learning a lot of things that are not fun to learn about. You know, his mom cheating on his dad attempting suicide by popping a bunch of aspirin one night, learning all these really difficult to learn things, you know, having already gone through so much adversity at a young age and following his incident. You know, you feel for the kid. And unexpectedly, you know, in the third act, it's a long movie, 2.5 hours, but I think it really maintains the tension, maintains the audience interest. And I was not expecting Daniel to like pull up from deep like Steph Curry and do the test on his seeing eye dog to prove that he knew about his dad's suicide and like learned some, you know, mechanics to corroborate some things in his own hazy memory. That was, like, I think, a really impressive scene. Like, I wasn't quite sure exactly what Daniel was up to, because it's plausible that he could have done an accident as well, you know. And the ending where Sandra and Daniel reunite once the trial is concluded, ton of tension in that ending scene, even though literally nothing actually takes place, like nothing actually happens plot-wise, speaks to, again, I think, the investment you have as a viewer. And also, I think it's really fun to watch this if you're not a French person, is the courtroom dynamics. Like, how the courtroom works in France is a lot different than how we know of it here in the United States. And watching the prosecutor, the defendant, the defense, the judge, all kind of in rolling conversation, cross back and forth with each other, it's very interesting. I gotta say, the prosecutor actor, played by Antoine Reynartz, he was really great. You know, plays, like, I think, a really committed prosecutor, but not, like, villainous. Like, he's, like, really, I think, going through and presenting lots of doubts, and, like, the way that the script gives him, I think, so many interesting angles to play at in terms of this very complex relationship that, you know, puts you in the center of, you know, I think, as a viewer, it's like, even if someone seems to have plenty of reason to kill someone, if we can't prove it, then doesn't mean that they killed the person, right? And the messiness of it all, I think it's all done in, like, such tactful way. Of course, on the other side of that, you have Sandra's defense lawyer, Vincent, played by Swan Arlaud, who's an old friend of hers, who happens to be a lawyer. He does a really good job of countering the prosecutor. Like, it's just fun. Like you love, I think, courtroom scenes when they're done great are so compelling, right? There's just so much, like, material to latch onto and, like, drama, right? And he, like, as a natural, like, counter to the prosecutor per his, you know, role in the court, does a great job. And, you know, then at the end, like, you can tell there's a bit of sexual tension between the lawyer and the defendant, these two friends, which is established kind of early on a little bit. And then there's a brief moment at the end where you're wondering what's going to happen. Going throughout the whole movie, I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm waiting for, is Daniel going to, like, turn his back on his mom? You know, and you think that's going to happen when he sends her away before he experiments on the dog. You know, it's, I think there's just a lot to think about as a viewer with Anatomy of Fall, but just so compulsively watchable. And even though it's a lot of heavy material, you know, you're talking about a murder and the discussion about that murder, watching the fight between Sandra and Sam, very hard to watch because it's a kind of debilitating verbal argument. Of course, Daniel, who seems to have a lot of agency, but is still a obviously blind person, and Sandra makes a big point in the movie that, like, she never wanted to label him as handicapped, and he lives a good life and all those things. There's a lot of chances where this movie could have gone wrong, but I think by subverting so much of the tropes of this kind of story, you know, avoiding the obvious stuff of just getting into the whodunit and mechanics of how this person died, focusing on something greater, really interesting movie, and I was quite pleased with it. So I'm hoping this finds some success in the U.S. with this Neon release. The fact that it has some English dialogue might help that a little bit, but it is pulpy. It's really watchable. So we'll see how that goes. I'm not going to hold out too much hope for it, but it's also a cheap movie, so it doesn't take much money for this to become a nice hit. But yes, shout out Justine Triet, who I was not familiar with. She's made a few movies thus far. But yeah, this is a banger for sure. Now we have Fall. And make sure you check it out. Let me know what you thought of it. And for more movie reviews, subscribe. And I'll see you next time. All right, so that's going to do for the pod this week. Next week, a much larger pod, a lot of heavy hitters once again. We have the conclusion of Gen V Season 1 on Amazon Prime Video. The debut album from Jungkook of BTS. Very excited to get into that one. Kevin Abstract's third album. And then new movies. The Holdovers from Alexander Payne, starring Paul Giamatti. Sofia Coppola's Priscilla, starring Kaylee Spaney and Jacob Elordi, and also Apple TV Plus's Fingernails, another film. And yeah, things are picking up in November, so can't wait to get to it. Make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod. See links below for the best of 2023 Spotify playlists. Let me know what's good, and I'll see you next week.